Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty, once again for KTAH, 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully. Today, we're going to be talking to Jenny Hitchin. She is a candidate for Pierce County Council, District 6. She's a Democratic candidate, and let's just listen in and hear what she has to say. And as we go there, just want to make the point, while we care a lot about some of the, let's call them the big time elections, senators, presidents, things like that, local issues are so important, and they are all tied together with national perspectives, all the way down to county and city perspectives on getting ready for the impacts of climate change that are on the way, the impacts that we're seeing right now. So let's listen in, and I'll talk to you on the other end. We're very pleased to have Jenny Hitchin with us today. Jenny's a candidate for Pierce County Council in District 6, and looking forward to hearing some of her perspectives on what's going on with the county, what she would like to bring to the table if she gets elected. So good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, John, and thanks for having me.
Hey, it's a real pleasure, and I appreciate you taking the time. I know as the election gets close here, your calendar is probably pretty full, so doubly thankful for you taking the time to be with us. So let's get going here. Our program is called Climate Talk. And so our focus is on climate mitigation, adaptation, everything climate, as I say. And Pierce County is just a little tiny place in a great big world. But I'm just wondering, as resident of Pierce County and running for the council, what are your points of view on how Pierce County fits into the whole environmental climate change picture?
So we have a pretty significant population here in Pierce County, and climate emergency is what I like to call it at this point, as far as what's going on. And with the size of our population and some of the things that are going on in our community and in our region, Pierce County has been kind of in a holding pattern in as far as taking action. And I think that as a county with all of the natural resources that we do have, we need to be making sure that as a community and a region that we are taking care of those natural resources so they're here, for generations to come. And our county has such a rich and diverse, region. I mean, we have mountains and waterways, and we have freshwater and saltwater, and we have forests, and we have farms. And some of those areas are being threatened by increase in housing and sprawl. And I think our county needs to be protecting that, because even though people like to think that maybe it's not going to make a difference, if we all think that nothing will change, and our climate change will truly become a climate emergency that we can't backpedal from. And so I think that we need to think locally to help regionally to then help the world. So as a science teacher, I kind of talk about this like an ecological mind, that we need to be protecting ourselves, and we do that together.
Yeah, you are a science teacher, as I understand, and I want to talk a little bit more about science here in a minute. So just picking up on some of what you sketched out there about the county, and by the way, I've got to say that I kind of pick up a real love for the environment in your comments there. We are blessed with such an incredibly beautiful environment here, one of the most beautiful places in the world, and I don't say that in any kind of chauvinistic way, but Mount Rainier and the rivers and the forests and so on and so forth. I certainly share that love of our environment with you. So one of the things I'm somewhat aware of is you made some references towards growth, and there are, let's say, interests in the county that would push back against ideas about managing this growth. You know, more the attitude that, well, if it's ours, we can do whatever we want to with it. If we want to put in a subdivision in our forest lot, we're just going to go ahead and do that, and it's none of the government's business. How would you respond to somebody who had that perspective?
So I know individuals with their own property want to be able to do whatever they want, especially if it's like if their nest egg. And I absolutely do understand that. And I empathize with that. And I think the county has a responsibility to try and assist people, especially like down in the Puyallup Valley. We have farms and farmland that isn't, you know, making as much money as it used to. And farmers want to sell off their land, but we need to protect those things. And I think it's the county's responsibility to work with these people to protect our farmland and our forest land. And there's ways to do that responsibly. And it takes a little bit of education and it takes some communication and having those true and honest conversations with individuals about how this can help our community. And I don't want to go and take anyone's property. I don't want to, you know, kick people out. It's about that, again, that communication and looking long term. I think one of the things that the county can do is when it comes to, I like to say, I want to protect, I live in Parkland and we are like an area that's like perfect for increasing density and growth because we have the infrastructure in place. We're right near two main corridors. We have 512 and we have I-5. And both of those, you know, though there's a lot of traffic, there's not a lot of side road driving to get to those. Whereas if you drive further out into towards Mount Rainier, into Graham and further out, which is where they would love to just be able to basically build suburbia all the way from here to the mountain, then we're losing all that green space. We are threatening our water sources. We are covering up areas with cement and roads that aren't necessary. And our roads to those spaces can't withstand that increase in traffic. And so it's about smart growth. We know we have a housing shortage. We know that we don't have enough space for let me rephrase that. We do have space. The problem is we want to protect that space. So we need to actually make sure that our growth is occurring in such a way that we are really using the space that's available the best way possible. And so I think it comes to education and communication and collaboration with the people who own the property that want to just do whatever they want with. And let's talk about why this might not be the best idea and how can we make this work both ways? What do we need to do? And if we aren't doing that work, then nothing changes.
Well, so if I could kind of say back what I think I heard, a part of what I'm hearing, maybe a major part, is the necessity of listening to people, talking to people, understanding what their individual issues are, and at the same time paying attention to the larger picture, which is our overall environment. Is that a fair assessment of your point of view?
Yep, that really is. I really believe that at all levels of government, but especially here locally, individual people don't really seem to have a voice. And so I want to make sure that if you are a farmer or you own, you know, 10 acres out in Graham and you want to sell it off and turn it into a subdivision, that somebody's talking to you and communicating with you about, okay, so what are we going to do about making sure that we're mitigating for the loss of trees and the loss of green space? And, you know, are we going to put 50 homes in 10 acres? Like the zoning out there to me seems to be you drive down one road and there can be houses right next to each other. And then you drive down another road and they can be, you know, on 1 and 2 acre lots. And so I am not sure on the county level how all of the zoning is decided because I can't see a pattern when I'm driving around in that area. But I'm sure on a map somewhere, there's like a very detailed map that says what you can and can't do. And so in areas where we still have forest land that's not touched, and if it's county land, you know, what are we going to do with that so that we really are protecting our green space? We need that. We need that green space. We need green if we're going to help mitigate some of the carbon dioxide that's going into our atmosphere.
Yeah. Okay. So let's segue to that just a bit. Now, you've talked significantly about general kind of environmental issues, local environmental issues. How do you see, if you see the impact that we can have right here in Pierce County on the whole climate change issue? And I'm speaking particularly of carbon emissions.
So I was frustrated with the fact that Pierce County did not sign on with the clean fuel standards or the Clean Air Agency fuel standards, and then took it a second step and didn't even like lobby for the state to put it in place. Like they basically were not working against it, but just were like, no, we're not interested. And so you look at our surrounding counties and states near us that are signing on to that because they see the importance, and yet somehow Pierce County doesn't need to be part of that conversation, which is a flaw in the thinking. We do need to be. We are a huge contributor to greenhouse gases in our community, and by far our vehicles driving on the road are one of the biggest contributors in our region. And we really need to be looking at how we can reduce the number of cars that are on the road. And I think more importantly, in some of our more urban areas, how do we reduce the number of cars sitting in traffic? And I think it comes down to one, looking at our traffic patterns and what do we need to do to try and alleviate some of our bottleneck areas. And I know we have construction projects that are hopefully, when they're finally finished, going to help with some of that. But every time we build something that's more efficient in our community as far as travel, more construction goes in for housing, and it tends to go in areas that, like I said, is out in, you know, out into rural areas. And so then we end up with more traffic on our arterials instead of in areas where people can access public transit and our train system and some of the other ways to move around our community that are more ecologically friendly. So if we can get more people on public transit because our transit system is more efficient and have less people sitting in their cars in traffic, going nowhere with their engines running, it's a win-win for both sides. Like, it will make people happy because they won't be sitting in traffic, and it will make, I guess the environment isn't happy, but it will be better for our environment.
Yeah, I get that. Earlier in my life, I lived out in Eatonville and I worked up at SeaTac. And so over the years, I spent a lot of time driving Meridian and the Mountain Highway. And I've been able to observe over the years what a nightmare those two corridors have become. So it would be great to see if we could get cars off the highway through those areas. And it would be especially wonderful. I'm sure you understand or know that Pierce County Transit has started using electric buses, and I can imagine nice, clean, no carbon emitting buses running up and down those corridors and getting people back and forth to where they need in an efficient and happy way. And I say happy, I take the bus up to SeaTac quite a bit when I have to go up there, and it's so nice to be able to sit in the bus and read my email or something like that rather than fuss about the traffic, which kind of drives all of us crazy, I think.
Yes. So I don't think anyone is ever very happy sitting in traffic. So
yeah. So you're coming down Foursquare again, sitting in traffic. I get that. So yeah, it should be a lot of folks that can respond to that in a positive way. One of the things I'm wondering about, and that is individual vehicles, because even if we do have an effective transit system, people are going to still need to get that mile or two from their homes to where they get on the mass transit. I'm a big proponent of electric vehicles. I own one myself. One of the problems is that multifamily housing usually is very, very problematic for somebody when they're considering buying an electric vehicle. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about having building requirements going forward that would require they be wired for EV charging.
So amusingly enough, that's actually one of the things when I was looking through the Centers and Corridors plan. I know they're really trying to push this, you know, higher density housing, and they want to reduce the number. Like, they don't want, if they put in an apartment complex, they're not going to put two parking spots in for every single apartment. And I look at that and I think first, well, how do they, if they have two cars, where do they park and what's that going to do to the community? And then the second part, you know, like, okay, so if they have one car, are, you know, can they charge? And so I think that is something that the county could do, is that making sure that when we are building single family homes or even apartment complexes, or duplexes or fourplexes, that we really do say that, you know, here's an incentive from the county for you to have this smaller electrical car. It takes up less space in the parking strip, and it takes up, so you can get more of them in. And then if the incentive for the people to have the electric car is that maybe it costs less, or if there's, I know that right now people with electric cars pay a tax to reimburse for the loss of gas tax revenue, but it's just the idea of how do we make it easy for them to use their vehicles. And I know there are lots of places around our community that have charging stations, but the fact that a house isn't wired for that doesn't make any sense in this day and age. I think that as we move towards reducing the number of vehicles that use gas at all, I want to say the state of California has put something in place that says basically by 2050, you will no longer be able to buy a gas using car. And so 2050 could be the wrong year. But looking at things like that, anything that we're building new, why wouldn't we say, hey, you need to do this in some way, shape or form, whether it's a carport or a garage, there needs to be, while you're doing all the electrical, please put in this one thing. And I don't think any of our labor unions would have an issue. They just want to make sure that, that A, it's done correctly, because it's far easier to do it, you know, before the house is done than it is after the house is done to retrofit or try and install anything after. Anyone who's ever done electrical work understands what I'm talking about there. It's much easier to do it without drywall in place and everything. So.
Yep, for sure. In fact, I have a charging station in my home, and it only cost me $100 or so to have it installed in my garage. And the reality is that most electric car owners, at least locally here, charge at home. Having stations is a help, but it's only a help, and we really do need to be able to charge from our homes. There's a multifamily building not far from me, and I noticed the other day there's a guy that's got an electric car, and he had an extension cord running off his second floor deck down to the ground and out to his car that was parked in front of his apartment. So pretty much of a jury-rigged thing, and probably a little bit hazard if the truth were to be known. So yeah, I really hope going forward that we do pay attention to making it easier for people, especially in multifamily homes, to own an electric car. So let's change gears just a bit here. We're seeing all around the world the impacts, the changes that we're experiencing as a result of climate change, warmer, wetter, drier, and Pierce County is not going to be excluded from that. And so I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about, we can expect that the west of the mountains, we're going to be seeing more wildfires than we've seen in the past, and we're going to have wetter winters, possibly some landslides, some flooding associated with that, and hotter, drier summers. How do you feel we're sitting in Pierce County in terms of being ready for those kinds of changes?
So I know that Pierce County has a sustainability plan. I think it's Sustainability 2030. And part of that plan is really looking at, are we ready for these climate emergencies that are coming our way? And the way, for instance, the wildfires that were happening literally this month, I think, and in September, regionally, and still happening in California, like, we know they're coming. And so how do we make sure that we're ready for those types of things? And I think one of the things for me, locally where I live, we've never really had issues with urban flooding. It's just been, you know, a little bit here and there, or if, you know, And more often I have been driving home from work or driving somewhere during rain, and we are seeing more and more standing water sitting in areas because we just, it's piling up because it's not able to go into the ground because the ground is covered with cement. And so it's one of those things where the county really needs to be very intentional about looking at preparing emergency services and having plans for things like urban flooding, having plans for wildfires that are near housing developments. I mean, if you ended up with a wildfire out in some of unincorporated Pierce County, where we have, you know, like near Tahale or something like that, we have forest land surrounding these, you know, huge housing developments. And if it were to get into the housing development, do we have a very specific plan for getting people out? Do we have a specific plan for getting emergency vehicles in? And I think our counties, at least our fire departments, have been doing a fantastic job communicating with each other, showing up and assisting each other, bringing in resources that one crew doesn't have that another crew does. And just the response to the ones locally here that we had recently, you know, they did a really, really good job. It's just, you know, the winds change and all of a sudden something that we thought we had under control, we don't. And then they respond and they communicate effectively and they work as a team. And I think that's one of the pluses of our the way we run our fire districts is that they're districts and they kind of have their own zones, but you call 911 for something big, you're going to get people from all over, just like if you call the police, they come, you know, you get Pierce County sheriffs, but you also maybe get Tacoma or you get Lakewood, depending where you are. And they support each other. And I think that continuing as a community to train and prepare them for those services, making sure they have the tools they need so they can respond. And that's the job of the county, to make sure that regionally we are ready for something big and not waiting till after it happens. We need to prepare for it now and make sure that we're ready now. And then honestly, hope we don't have to use it. And that's the hard thing to sell to people because they don't want to spend the money now, but it's way too late if we already have a huge forest fire, like near Tahale or out near Mount Rainier, and we can't do anything about it because it's too late to go get the equipment. And so I think, like I said, I think we're doing a good job, but we need to make sure we continue to push and prepare and plan for those worst case scenarios.
Yeah, I really admire that perspective. One of the things that I've observed about how we operate as a culture, let's call it, is it seems like we would rather deal with messes than prevent those messes in the first place. And the kind of planning you're talking about, while it is somewhat of a difficult sell, as you point out, in the long run, it's way cheaper than dealing with the messes. So if you are elected to the council, I certainly hope that the council will give its attention towards planning towards these things. As you say about wildfires, we know they're coming. So let's do what we need to do and get prepared for them while we can, rather than just dealing with the mess after the fact. So you mentioned that you're a science teacher. I'm just interested in what your perspective, let's say culturally speaking, is about the status of science, let's say locally, but as wide as we care to look. I saw a news program the other day and a woman was being interviewed. And one of the things she said was, well, I just don't trust the scientists, which to me seemed like a very strange thing to say, but there is an element of that in our culture. So where do you think science fits into our planning for the future?
So I think one of the things that's happened over time is that when the science has become really biased because of who's footing the bill, and who's doing the study, and then which study you read, people get frustrated because one scientist says this, and you know, a scientist from this prestigious company or this prestigious college says, you know, X, and then you go across the country or across the block, and another scientist says completely the counter thing, and people are left with trying to figure out, how do I interpret that data? And one of the things that I always instill in my students is, you need to look at the study, or you need to look at the evidence as a whole. How many, if it's a study of, you know, something being effective, how many people were involved in the study? So if a really good example that we were talking about is the idea of sleep and teenagers, and, you know, how many hours of sleep. And there was a study, I can't remember what it was. This was a couple of years ago, but it led to a really good conversation with kids. And, you know, we pulled up a study and it said, you know, teenagers only needed like 6 hours of sleep minimum, and they'll be totally fine and function and everything's great. And, you know, we pulled up this news article. It looked really good. It had all the things it's supposed to. It had all the graphs and the charts and footnotes. But then you pulled up five other studies that all said teenagers needed 8 to 10 hours of sleep to be healthy and productive because they're growing and their bodies are changing and we're asking them to function, you know, cognitively. And, you know, and so then they're like, well, which one do you believe? And I said, well, let's look a little deeper. You need to look at how many people were involved in the study. And it came, once they found that the study for the kids was for that one study, you know, there was only 100 people involved. So 100 teenagers all in the same school were involved in this study because it was a study done like out of college. And then you had, you know, these other ones where there were thousands of teenagers and they're like, so which do you choose? Well, you're going to choose the one that actually is more valid and more reliable, has used a broader number of students, has collected and done multiple trials. How did they collect their data? And I think helping people understand that you can get data to support any answer you're looking for. It's just how you interpret it and how you gather the data. And so it comes down to, for me as a science teacher, education, teaching people how to actually look and take evidence and then make informed decisions. And a lot of times at the governmental level, they're taking the data that's presented and not asking questions like that. They're not going, where did you get this evidence? Who did you ask? Who paid for it? And that's really important, because if you only use one piece of evidence to make a decision and you don't ask those questions about that evidence, then you're basically you're making a decision based on possible bias because you haven't done your due diligence. And so I think it really comes down to education with the community and understanding how that can happen when you're looking at science, evidence, and data.
Yeah, I one of the things that I say regularly on this program, I encourage people to do their homework, quote unquote. Sounds like what you're talking about. Some of these issues, many of these issues, can't be understood in a trivial kind of way. We really need to dig in, and that's what I hear you saying. And it seems like a really good thing to do. And it can actually be kind of fun sometimes to learn something that I didn't know before. Once again, changing gears just a little bit here, the Pierce County Council has been majority Republican for some time, and there's a good chance, I believe, if you get elected, that the council may become a Democratic majority. So how would you approach that? And I'm particularly interested in, I'm just a personal comment here. I'm really getting sick of our polarized political system. It doesn't have to be that way. And I'm just dreaming about the day when we are able to listen to each other. So what's your perspective if the Democrats do have a majority on the council? How would you see yourself working with the Republican minority?
So first and foremost, so it's been 16 years since we've had a Democratic majority. And the seat that I am going after is like the most flippable seat. But with that said, I have, and one of the reasons I'm running is I was tired of sitting on the sidelines and being frustrated by electing people and feeling like they are not going and doing their job. And when I elect somebody to office, when I cast my vote and then they win, I expect them to do their job. And my frustration that I see at all levels of government, it's like they kind of get into this, it's our way, meaning the Republican or the Democratic side, or no way. Well, you don't get to do that. They're not toddlers. They're supposed to be there doing the work that they are being paid for and that we elected them to do. And so I think one of the things that I bring to the table that's a little different is that I am not a politician. I'm a high school science teacher. I'm very used to working very, very hard. And I will look at this as a job to represent the people of the 6th district. And if there are people in our community that don't have somebody that's speaking up for them, they can come talk to me. But I think to see a Democratic majority, my hope is that as a council, we will really be focusing on people first, and really looking at how we can better the community as a whole. And that doesn't mean I don't listen to Republican ideas. I think when we stop listening to each other, that's the first step to things falling apart. You need to actually listen, because if you're not listening, you're not learning and you're not communicating. And so I want to listen to all ideas. I want to ask questions for understanding. I need to understand the perspective of both sides, because then I can make an informed decision based on that. And then there are going to be times where I may or may not agree with one side or the other, but it's not because one party told me. It's going to be something that I truly believe is better for the community as a whole. And so I think party politics has gotten in the way of a lot of really good things in Pierce County. Probably the best case that just drives me nuts is the 0.1% sales tax. And nobody likes talking about taxes, but every urban county in our state has already done this. Pierce County is the only one. And in, I think it was March, right before COVID shut down, or it might have been February, they were going to present to the council. They were going to have them vote, and then they sidelined it again. And there were over 70 people in this room begging from across the county, and it was youth and police and fire and school districts and counselors and teenage groups, and some of our mental health providers were just begging the council to please pass this. And it still, right down party lines, did not. And that bothers me, because the council, in my opinion, did not listen. And when you have 70 people that are willing to come to a meeting in the middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday, which means they either left their homes, left their kids, and possibly left their jobs for the day to go to this meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they weren't listened to. And they were there for hours waiting to speak, and they spoke, but they were not listened to. And that bothers me. And again, that's party politics in action.
Yeah, well, I admire that perspective. And if you do get elected, I am hopeful that that you will be a catalyst for kind of changing that approach. We are getting close to the end here, Jenny. Anything else that you'd like to bring up that we haven't talked about so far?
So I like I said, kind of a couple times through here, I really do value our environment and our community. One thing that our county does a pretty good job with, and I just want to applaud them for this, is parks. We have, if you want to play frisbee golf, there's a park for that. If you want to have a picnic with a family, there's a park for that. If you want a really challenging hike, there's a park for that. If you want to just walk your dog, or take your, if you have somebody who has a disability and can't, get around as well, we have paved paths in parks. And so we have done a really fantastic job with parks throughout our community. And I just want to make sure that we continue to do that, because it's so good for the mental and physical health of our community to have access to green space and nature and parks. And so I really hope to continue that, because I think it shows value, and it's healthy for us to have access to that. And I sometimes people think parks are like, just a playground. And no, we if you want to go to the beach, like, we have just so much of everything. And it really amplifies all that Pierce County has to offer when you can find a park for pretty much anything. And so I've just really admired that and appreciate that across our community, and just find it really helpful. And just good for us as a community.
Yep. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other parts. So I'm super excited to win this seat. We've been working really, really hard. both, you know, calling voters. As a first-time candidate, I was anticipating lots of different things and pretty much didn't get to do any of those things, like, you know, go to libraries and talk to voters and, you know, doing meet and greets with people and knocking doors, hundreds and hundreds of doors. And obviously, due to a pandemic, all of that got shut down. So we're always looking for volunteers to, you know, help make calls, sign waving, and then, of course, always any kind of support people can give. So if people did want to learn more about me, my website is electjannihitchin.com. Do you want me to spell that, John, or?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So elect, everybody got that part, but Janni is J-A-N-I and then Hitchin is H-I-T-C-H-E-N.com. So, and there's some videos and photos of people, since this is on the radio, want to just, you know, see who I am. But feel free to reach out if you have questions, and I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, it's been fantastic having you, Janni. I appreciate your sharing your views with us and wish you well going forward.
Thank you very much. Stay safe, everyone. Mask up and remember to vote as soon as you can.
For sure. And just for the record, I voted yesterday. So all good. Okay, take care, Janni.
Bye-bye.
So there we are. It was great talking to Janni Hitchin, candidate for Pierce County Council for the 6th District. A couple of follow-up things here from our conversation. The county council, considering the 0.1% sales tax, that was targeted for behavioral health. I'll put a link to that proposal on the show notes. You can reach those show notes at ccltacoma.org. There'll be a couple others here too. She also commented on California requiring that only non-emitting vehicles would be required after a certain point. There is an executive order in California that says all new passenger vehicles and trucks, cars and trucks sold in California after 2035, they need to be zero emission vehicles. And she also made reference to the sustainability plan for Pierce County. That's a great document, and I'll also provide a link to that document in our show notes, ccltacoma.org. Love to hear from you. If you have any comments, you can reach me at John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org. So until next time, reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care.